Hey guys, thanks for listening this week. Want to give a small disclaimer that there's technical difficulties in the back half of the episode, the last 20 minutes or so, but boy, the audio didn't sync. It's a casualty of the social distancing.
Yeah, as you probably found with all these Zoom calls, audio tends to go in and out every now and then. So that's kind of what happened with ours, and the sync issue kind of happened in the last 20 minutes. So you'll be able to put it together yourselves.
Yeah, it's you can still follow the conversations. It's just a little out of sync.
Well, thanks for listening. Enjoy.
Adrian's dead.
Listen, you're getting your freedom back, okay?
He said that wherever I went, he would find me. Walk right up to me, and I wouldn't be able to see him.
Adrian is dead.
He's not dead. He has figured out a way to be invisible.
Hello, and welcome to Pete, a weekly movie and awards show podcast. I'm Andrew, and I'm joined here today, socially distanced, as always, by Matt.
Hello.
And we are back from hiatus to bring you some new episodes amidst our lockdown, and we just thought it would be a good idea since there's nothing else to do but to watch movies, so we figured we'd talk about them.
Yes.
And yeah, we really just wanted to make this kind of like an interactive experience for a few weeks for you all and make this a sort of listener's choice.
Yes.
So
so this is a listener's choice. So as you said, we want to make these next few weeks as interactive as possible for everyone. So we've got things upcoming in the future that we all want you to vote on, that Andrew and I will kind of put out there, and we'll have you guys vote. So next week, hopefully we'll talk about some classic films, and then after that, virus films. So kind of going with the theme of, you know, the zeitgeist. And then after that, maybe some feel-good films to lift up our spirits and make us all feel a little bit cheery and a little bit better. And then if we're still in quarantine after 4 weeks, we'll hear from you, and you guys can make a theme and we'll talk about it. But I am losing my mind. I'm telling you, I can't. I really hope this doesn't go on much longer.
If we're going on in 4 weeks still, that's but it's very possible.
I need to get into a movie theater. Oh jeez. We're doing this special series to begin with is because movie theaters are closed. So I guess right now we're kind of in this funky limbo in the film industry. Theaters are closed. I don't know if you want to speak a little more on that, Andrew, but it's not a good time for movies.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a good time for the economy, the worldwide economy.
Oh, and yeah, there's all that too.
Yeah, it's this crazy, crazy time that movie theaters are closed, and for the first time in history, there are no box office reports. So, I mean, theaters even were still open, like the Great Depression and World War II. They actually lifted up spirits, like it was actually a thriving sort of industry, one of the very few. So, so it's strange, unprecedented. And like the ripple effects are going to be felt for a while, I think.
Oh yeah.
So
wouldn't it be nice to be able to get us all in theaters and like socially distance ourselves somehow, like get us in little pods so we can all watch movies, or like drive-in theaters, would be good. I don't know.
I know.
Maybe they'll make a comeback. Who knows?
This is an opportunity for drive-in theaters to really shine again. I mean, this is all like very sad to start things off on a somber note. It's all very sad because it's not like movie theaters were doing that well before all this happened because of, you know, things like Netflix, truthfully. And like people, you know, getting people into the theater was like a very difficult sort of experience. And a lot of people like report negative experiences, you know, having to do with, you know, like the 30-minute trailers, just like a bad sort of live experiences, expensive items. So like that's why movie theaters have been like changing a lot recently, and now they're like not getting any revenue other than the stimulus that came in, which movie theaters can apply for, the small business loans. But so like that's it. That's all they have to go off of. And I kind of, in a weird sort of way, not that I wished that this ever happened, but I wish there was like some huge, huge movie that we could all like rally behind, like the release back in theaters. Like I wish like Avengers Endgame came out this year, you know?
Yeah.
And then everyone would be like back and like, getting behind that. But there isn't really a huge, huge movie like that this year. Mm-hmm. And plus, who knows, one will be able to go back to the theaters anyway. So
yeah, who knows? Were you able to get into the theater at all before this whole thing started?
Yes, the last movie that I saw in theaters was a movie called First Cow, just a small
little
indie movie by Kelly Reichert about like Oregon Territory, so in like westward expansion. And it's like very nice, quiet, pleasant movie about accidentally discovering capitalism. So
it looks like a nice, relaxing movie to sit and watch. I do want to check it out.
It was nice. It was pleasant. But I don't know when anyone's going to be able to see it.
Yeah.
What was the last movie you saw in theaters?
I was fortunate enough to see an advanced screening of Onward a few weeks ago. So I really appreciated that I was able to see that. And I really enjoyed it. It was a little heavy, a little hard for me to watch because of the themes. I didn't really watch any trailers for it because I knew I wanted to see it because it's Disney Pixar. But I didn't really know what I was getting into. So it was a little difficult to watch. But overall, it was really good. I wouldn't call it one of the best Disney Pixar movies, but it certainly had some great themes. And I did enjoy it. Yeah, it was good. It was a good movie.
Yeah. And so Onward is a great sort of example of what movies that came out in theaters right before the coronavirus like really exploded, at least in the US, like what movies and studios decided to do, which is pull them from theaters once the theaters started closing and put them on demand.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Onward is one of them. And Onward eventually made its way. I think it's on Disney Plus now. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah. Listeners. Yeah. I believe it's on Disney Plus. Yeah. I know there was talk of doing that with Mulan, but they decided to not do that and they're going to delay the release for that. Yeah, they did that with Onward. So I mean, I have a very unpopular opinion with this. I do not like don't like the format of releasing movies on demand. I understand the circumstances now, like that, like they don't have a choice, but I really hope the studios don't go this way in the future, giving people the option of going to the theater or watching on demand. I really feel like the movie going experience, going to the theater, is what it is. It's an experience, and people shouldn't stop doing that just because we have the option of on demand. So I'm appreciative of the studios doing this now, but I really hope this is not a new trend that's going to start. I don't know if you agree with me or not on that, but
yeah. So this is such like an extreme circumstance. In the cases of the movies that just came out and essentially were cut off at the knees, box office wise, because they had no opportunity to gain box office once the theaters closed, the studios were put in a damned if you do, damned if you don't sort of circumstance. So in order to like recoup as much of their losses as they can, they put these movies on demand and charge $19.99 to rent.
Which actually is, if for a family of four, that's very cheap. That's what, $5 a person, and you're gonna like spend $10-15 a pop at the theater for tickets. So it's a good price. It's a good deal. My only thing is that I was reading a bunch of articles about like, is this the future of Hollywood? Is this what Hollywood's gonna do? Or is this the new norm? At least from my personal opinion, I hope it's not. But I do understand the circumstances that we're under and the pressure that the studios are under. I get it. So I'm happy they did what they did for now.
I mean, like the truth of the matter is like, we don't know. I mean, anyone who says, we just like don't know how this is going to shake out. We don't know if people are really going to want to go back to the movie theaters again. But
at least not for a long time.
Yeah. Or an optimistic sort of view, like, and this is what I was getting at behind the Avengers comment, was that people could want to do something. They could want to get back to a sort of normalcy, yeah, right? And so that's why they want to, like, go to the theaters. And it's like, right now, there's not going to be anything major opening up until, like, July. Right now, that could change. I don't know if that's, like, I don't think Tenet is a big movie, but, like, I don't know if that's going to be the one everyone's going to rally behind.
I don't know.
There could be that sort of thing that happens in the future.
So, so this leads us all to our first themed week this week, which is new movies.
On-demand movies.
Yeah, exactly. So we opened the poll with five options this week, our poll on Facebook, which we appreciate everyone who voted in. We had a poll on Facebook going and Twitter, and the five options were Birds of Prey, Emma, The Gentleman, The Invisible Man, and Onward. So these five movies were the ones that were cut off, and they were put on demand, like we were talking about earlier. So we opened the poll, and with 38% of the vote, the winner is The Invisible Man. Woo-hoo. So that's what we'll be talking about today. So I don't know if, Andrew, maybe you want to give a quick synopsis of the plot. I don't know. ten words or fewer.
Yeah, in putting under the pressure. So yeah. Okay, I did not prepare for this, so we will see how this goes.
Quick challenge. I like challenging you in these times.
Okay, I have enough challenges.
You should have been prepared for this. You ain't doing nothing else.
I'm stalling. Okay, here we go. A 10 words or fewer plot synopsis of The Invisible Man. Elizabeth Moss.
Two. That's two words.
Elizabeth Moss is abused by X. He comes back invisibly. 10.
Abused by X. Comes back. Okay, all right. Is invisibly a word?
Yeah. Okay. that's my thing.
Let me try this. Crazy scientist becomes invisible to stalk and terrorize ex-girlfriend.
Okay.
10.
Yeah. I love how we both use like the exact 10. We couldn't do any fewer.
I don't know if ex-girlfriend counts as one word or not. So
I know. That's why I tried, and that's why I said ex instead of ex-boyfriend.
Yeah. Cool. So how long were you able to see this recently, or
I rented it. I splurged the $19.99 because you all picked it. If Emma would have won, I wouldn't have had to spend $19.99. I saw that in theaters.
Yeah.
I think that was the only one I saw in theaters of the options.
Well, just, you know, consider it like you bought a ticket and a drink, and there you go.
I know.
You would have done it otherwise.
I would have done it no matter what. So I don't regret. I don't regret spending the $19.99.
So I guess how we're going to tackle this, we're going to split this up into two different sections. We're going to talk for a little bit spoiler free, and then after our spoiler free conversation, we'll talk spoilers. So we'll kind of have a mark there in the middle that, you know, stop here. If you haven't seen The Invisible Man, go watch it and then finish the rest of this podcast.
And we'll put time markers in the description of the episode so you know when to come back if you don't want to be spoiled.
Yeah.
But our first part will be spoiler free.
Right. So
the Invisible Man. Yes. Top line thoughts.
Best movie of 2020. not that we have had much to choose from, but
ain't that the truth.
Yeah, I freaking loved Invisible Man. I thought Elizabeth Moss gave one hell of a performance. I just thought her dichotomy between her and Aldous Hodges was great. I loved everything about Elizabeth Moss. She could do no wrong. And like, if I like were hosting the Oscars tomorrow, I would give her like the Oscar hands down. I thought, what's the husband's name? He was in
Oliver Jackson Cohen.
Oliver Jackson. Yes. Thank you. Yeah. He was in The Haunting, Haunting of Hill House on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was very good too. He was creepy. He did a good job in his role. Definitely. It yes, it met and exceeded my expectations, but I also wasn't sure what I was getting into. I guess I wasn't aware that this was kind of going to be like a Me Too era movie. As again, like, you know, I don't watch, I try to avoid trailers as much as I can, but I think they really pulled it off. I think they did such a good job, definitely taking away the theme of believing the woman in these kinds of situations. And I don't want to like get into any trouble here, but from my point of view, I thought they pulled off that whole conversation beautifully. I don't know if you want to speak to that at all.
So I was a little underwhelmed by The Invisible Man. So we might disagree on some things on here, but I think what we will agree on were the things that like did work. Like the things that really worked for me were the messaging. I actually thought it was really kind of awesome to take something, to take old movie, like a movie from like the 30s essentially, and and kind of like update it for a modern time. And they do that by tapping into like a very specific sort of horror and a specific sort of feeling. And I think I take this as gaslighting. I thought like gaslighting was like a very, very a theme that permeated throughout the movie, of like making a woman feel like she's crazy because of what, just like what the man says and does, and he's like a sociopath. So yes, so there's like a lot of things throughout the movie, and there are actually a lot of little subtle hints of like not believing women kind of throughout the movie. I thought one of the better ones, there was like a police interrogation scene, and they kept phrasing all their questions to Elizabeth Moss, her character's name, Cecilia Cass. And they kept posing all the questions to Cecilia, as in they're like, what did you do? So why you were at this like space right here at like this time? It's like, what did you say to do this? And it's like, wait, why is it my fault? Like, why is this all on me?
Yeah.
Like, you're supposed to be asking those questions. And so, and then there were like the obvious things of she had like an abusive boyfriend who like comes back to quite literally haunt her. So I thought that was like really, really well done. So I thought it was an effective sort of way. It's like the same sort of thing that they did in like Midsommar, which is like kind of like about grief, like a very specific sort of emotion. And I mean, like same thing about like calling women crazy is like dates back to in horror movies, like dates back to like Rosemary's Baby, for example.
Yeah.
So I think all that stuff like worked really well for like a 2020 era, and agreed on Elizabeth Moss. I think she like gave a really, really great performance. And it's a very physical performance too. Like there's a lot of like scenes where she's like being like dragged by like an invisible man. And I'm pretty like, this wasn't like green screen work. There wasn't like somebody in like a green man outfit and like pulling her. I think it was like all wires. And
She's like literally being like tossed around like the kitchen. And like, that's a very like physical job. I'm not sure if she had a stunt double for all of this, but it's a very physical job and it's very demanding, even without the stunt double, even the physical part, like the emotional part is very demanding of her. I think she did just such a good job handling like not only the physical stuff but all the emotional as well.
About the like the stunt double, I mean, I'm sure she had some double, but like there were a lot of oneers, like one takes, so where like the camera follows her like completely, so you can't really have a stunt double for doing some of that stuff if like the camera comes right back to you and you're acting with speaking lines. So so I'm sure she did a lot of it by herself. So
I was watching some documentary on stunt doubles, and they were saying that studios usually don't like, or directors usually don't like actors to do their own stunts because they don't want to risk hurting the actors. And I always I guess I was always under the impression that it was a good thing when actors did their own stunts, but I guess it's more frowned upon in Hollywood than I thought. I don't know. So
yeah, that's just I guess it's like, I mean, it's got to be like a liability sort of issue too.
Yeah. And it's like very hard for them to like replace the actors if they like are damaged or hurt in between filmings, especially if it's like a series or a show that they're filming. So that's what, why they don't want to use stunt doubles. And again, this should all go back to our topic earlier of stunts are so demanding and some of them are so hard to do. There needs to be a category in the Oscars for stunts and choreography.
Agreed. So. Yeah. And that brings up a very resonant point in today's era of like what happens like if someone gets hurt, like if an actor gets hurt and then they have to like postpone filming for 2 weeks. Literally, like, what's happening, like, right now. Like,
what's happening now, exactly. Yeah.
All these films that are currently in production that are shut down, who knows? Yeah.
Well, I guess, like, the studios are learning a big lesson right now of, like, what do you do in these times? And how do you work with other studios to push movies back and finagle release dates and all this stuff? So, I hopefully they can call this out and get it done. So.
Well, that's even just for, like, the films in the can. Like, the films that were, like, in production... They have schedules that they need to get
that
to.
They need to keep.
Yeah. And it's now it's all those are broken. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they have to redo all of that again. So it's going to be a mess. We're going to feel like the ripple effects for this for years in the movie industry. Yeah. Just, I mean, in the world, yes. But specifically in the movie industry too.
Yeah. And I guess it's a bigger conversation too about like, how is this going to impact the Oscars next year? That's like something we haven't even touched on yet.
Yeah. So. Yeah, to get, well, I promise this ties back into Elizabeth Moss, actually. So I think it's, number one, foolhardy just to, like, talk about anything, like, the Oscars, what's going to happen to, because, like, we just don't know when this pandemic is going to end, or at least until, like, when we're going to flatten the curve. So who knows, like, how long we'll be out of the movie theater, for example. So say if things, like, kept really bad till November, is there a scenario where they would cancel the Oscars or, like, seriously push back their eligibility date? Other things is, are they going to expand the eligibility to include things that are Netflix only movies? Like right now, the rules require that you play in a movie theater in New York or LA for 7 days.
Yeah.
And a lot, like, who knows? That's going to happen.
You just can't do it.
The other big thing is that since all these movies are getting pushed back, so, like, right now, a lot of these movies are planning to open up in the fall that were supposed to be opening up in the spring and summer. And let's say the Oscars keep all their eligibility. It's January 1st to December 31st. That means the fall for movies, if we're back, is going to be jam-packed with movies. And so, like, yes, like, what... Are some movies like probably not? Is Mulan going to get a ton of Oscar nominations? Probably not. But like that's going to suck up a lot of the oxygen about how movies are talked about. Like all these other movies, because there's so many, means that like the conversation can only be placed on a finite number of movies. So a lot of worthy movies that we thought would be big Oscar contenders may not be anymore. Because there's just so much going on at a short period of time.
Yeah, and the theater chains and the studios are going to keep the movies in theaters that are, I feel like, going to generate the most revenue that aren't necessarily, like you said, like Mulan isn't necessarily going to be an Oscar contender, or like Wonder Woman is not going to be an Oscar contender. But unfortunately, like...
Maybe not. People talked about Wonder Woman 1 getting a Best Picture nomination. It was was not out of the question.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. So, I guess we'll see. I mean, we can't predict the future, but it's a conversation that needs to be had, I guess, sooner rather than later.
So, the Oscars, the Academy Board... is meeting or scheduled to meet, hopefully virtually, at the end of the month. So they will be talking about a lot of these different options. So we'll know a little bit more in a few weeks.
Can I sit in on that?
I know, to be a fly on the wall. Oh my God. Like, But like, this is also the board that thought it would be a good idea to release a, you know, popular film category. So,
oh yeah. Well, I again, mean, more reason why I need to sit on that board.
Yeah.
can I, my 2 cents be heard?
So. Yeah. I mean, and like, what drugs are being supplied? So anyway, I promised I would tie it back to Elizabeth Moss.
Oh yeah.
And if the Oscars were completely cut off, like, yes, she would absolutely be a contender. For The Invisible Man. However, she also has a movie that at least a couple months ago was scheduled to come out this year, called Shirley. This is a movie that premiered at Sundance. And this is something that would be an Oscar contender because it's a biopic, essentially, of Shirley Jackson, funnily enough, the author of Haunting of Hill House.
Oh, yeah.
And, and got great reviews out of Sundance, and particularly for Elizabeth Moss. So I think a great performance in The Invisible Man would like boost her chances for Shirley, because like, as we've seen time and time again, Academy voters like really hate horror, and they like hate horror performances. Like, they didn't want to nominate Lupita Nyong'o. They didn't want to nominate like Toni Collette in both in Us and Hereditary respectively. So those like kind of things, like, so for The Invisible Man, it's like extremely unlikely, or unlikely, I will say, because the critics did push for Lupita Nyong'o, but it's unlikely. However, they could, because she has an Oscar Beatty type movie coming out, like this performance will help her Oscar Beatty performance, which is exactly what we saw last year with Florence Pugh in Little Women. Gave a great performance in like Midsommar, and then she's in this Oscar-friendly movie, Little Women. Guess what? She gets an Oscar nomination for Little Women. So I think the same thing could happen with Elizabeth Moss and Shirley.
Yeah.
If that happens at all.
Yeah, I'm just glad like this wasn't a role that would like bring down her chances or like bring her down, because I think she was like just absolutely phenomenal in this.
Yeah, she's great. She's, again, she's like one of the things that I really liked. I really liked the direction too. I thought it was like, it was very good atmosphere. I thought it was atmospheric. So Lee Wannell, who's the director, has like some background in, I shouldn't say some, he has background in horror franchises. Like, he was very involved in the Saw franchise.
He's done a lot of horror. He's done 4 Insidious movies, and yeah, he did like the first 3 Saws and Dead Silence. Yeah, he's definitely got a good background in horror.
So. Yeah, I don't know why I said some. I like knew he had.
I think the first Saw is brilliant. The sequels I do not care for, but I thought he co-wrote Saw with James Wan, and who's obviously like turned into the king of horror, and well, at least in today's world. And yeah, they both have a very similar, constantly feeling tense at the edge of your seat vibe. This one was a little more tamed down than Saw on many levels, but yeah, you definitely felt his direction there.
Yeah, I thought I really liked his direction, and like interesting takes, like I was talking about, like the Wonders, and the sort of like the way that they manipulate sound, particularly when there's like a literally invisible man.
Yeah, well, that's
in half the scenes.
Yeah, so it's very, very smart. I was going to say that it was very smart that they manipulated the sound and the noises you hear, and the sound that taking you back to like the really the suspenseful days of horror was really good, because you are missing one of your senses. Well, you're not missing, but when you can't see something, I guess, you know, the sound kicks in even more, which made it even, I felt, just made it even creepier and even better, and even more at edge of my seat than the sound and the music. The music was, I thought the music was very good.
I know, I like,
the score was so good.
The score is actually really good, and I say actually because most horror movies tend to have this a similar sort of score, right?
Yeah.
Of like creepy, but this one is uplifting weirdly, right? Like, it's more epic in the sense of like a lot of strings, like, or of strings like violins and like long notes instead of these like short it's flowier up. The score is actually pretty good.
Well, is it like, let me say here, the score, it's more, it didn't really convey much of a horror message to me, whereas like it's more of a science of someone fighting for their life or fighting for their message to be heard. Whereas like, you know, with horror, it's what you said, it's more like ding, ding, ding. And this was more like listening to a journey of someone trying to find her way.
The last track in the film is actually like something I've listened to a few times because I put movie scores on like while I work because it helps me and it calms me weirdly. And that track is like one that like I notice like over and over again. I really like it.
I gotta go back and listen to it. But
yeah. Well, that speaking of the end, because the end is also another thing that I liked, is might be a good sort of transition into spoilers.
I agree. Yeah.
And then also in the spoiler section, I will reveal what I didn't like then.
Yes, I'm very curious.
Yeah. It's what I didn't like actually isn't that spoilery, but for sake of sticking on the end, we'll jump into the spoilers now. So,
all right. So if you haven't seen The Invisible Man, you have 5 seconds to turn around and stop this podcast and come back and listen to the rest when you finish.
You can't help me. Surprise.
Okay, let's talk about the end.
Talk about the end. I love that it's like cathartic and she gets like, she like wins, like, especially in the sort of Me Too era of like so many unsatisfactory endings. And then like, she like gets it, like she gets to kill him, and it's like this big like sort of cheer for her, something to be happy about moment, and she can get on with her life. So I like that. I thought that was like really good. And like the ending dinner scene was really cool, like it was just really well done.
I thought the whole ending dinner scene was well done. I thought it was great. I will say I thought it was a little predictable, but I mean, we've seen so many, I guess, horror movies with surprise endings that it's like hard for us to like, it's hard for us to be surprised anymore by anything. So they gave you definitely a lot of hints and tricks throughout the movies that, you know, this is how it's going to go down. Like she will turn invisible herself. So I thought it was a little predictable. I wish it would have been something kind of different, but I did really like it. I liked that she got her revenge and like, it did wrap up nicely. There was no like plot holes or like, things at the end like where he like pops back up. I did like the ending overall and the completion of her story.
So what, again, this is like something that's like her story, because like in the original Invisible Man and all of its iterations up until now are all about the man, right? Like about the man who like is driven crazy and becomes invisible. Whereas this is like the other side of things, like, well, how does this affect like the other people in his life, particularly his girlfriend? So so I kind of like that sort of idea of it sort of like turning it on her head and making it her story instead of his. The way Universal originally wanted to go with these movies were not great. They wanted to like basically Marvelize the whole thing and like create like the Mummy. Remember, like when they redid the Mummy,
we're gonna pretend like the Mummy doesn't exist. We're just forget about that whole thing.
The Invisible Man was supposed to be part of that. Like they were supposed to create. They were trying to create this like franchise of like supervillains.
Like Marvel, like Universal Dark Universe, like you're talking about, like,
oh my god,
like, I know, like, yeah, like the Invisible Man was supposed to be a thing, and like the Mummy, I guess, but that's what I'm saying is like now we're like, if we want to start over, start fresh with like the Invisible Man, I guess, like we're gonna pretend the Mummy is nothing, but like now we can't really put this in anywhere in the Dark Universe, so just make it its own picture.
That's what I'm saying. Like this type of movie is so much better than like The Mummy, like The Mummy reboot. Yeah. So like, if you're gonna like move forward, move these like type of like this, like keep them like that. Like we don't need
as one movie. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I totally agree with you. We don't need like a dark universe of creatures and baddies. So I am curious to see like what they're gonna do with like the next Wolfman, even though we've already tried that, the one with Benicio del Toro. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
I kind of like it. But I guess I that's an unpopular opinion. But I guess I'm curious to see what they're going to do with Frankenstein. But I guess they announced they're doing Bride of Frankenstein first. Is that what I've heard?
I have no idea, actually.
I think I'm pretty sure that's what it is. So,
and this kind of leads into some of my sort of criticisms of the movie. I don't like necessarily like how they portrayed him to be like this whole like almost comic book like villain, or please excuse my use of that term, I guess, way of making him sort of villain. I'm thinking of like particularly the scene where where he like breaks into like the where she's like in the hospital, and like he breaks into the scene and then he like murders like six or seven cops just like straight there. Like, who the fuck is this guy? Like, he's a CEO who's like this like Mark Zuckerberg type, and now he's like all of a sudden like this like massive physical threat. Like, there's no way like this happens. Like, I understand you have to make him like physically threatening, but I actually think where the strength in the movie is like the psychological terror of it all, not the other way around.
Yeah. So just to kind of, I guess, push back on that is like what you were saying earlier is that this is her story. This is Elizabeth Moss's story. This is not his story. So I guess, yeah, we did not see like his background. We don't know his background. Like, if he's got like some karate jujitsu background, or like if he was like in the military, or
what CEOs do you know have? Exactly. What CEOs do you know have that?
I don't know. I don't know any, but we don't know his background. We don't know who he is. We don't. So I guess, yes, it is kind of a weakness, but it also is kind of contradictory to your point earlier that this is her story and it's not his. And yeah, so we didn't really get a chance to get to know him at all. But that being said, I understand what you're saying, and I understand.
Well, that's no.
It just, like, it didn't bother me like it did you. So.
Well, what I'm saying is that they shouldn't have had that in there, and like, but if they didn't have that in there, I think that actually makes her story even stronger, because it's this like this omniscient presence like in her life, and like what matters is how she feels that presence, like not what he's doing. So what I'm saying is that they don't need like the stuff, like don't need to make him into this like super strength villain.
I get what you're saying. I guess it just didn't bother me as much as like that scene didn't really bother. It was more of like an action, like more action, less horror, that scene. But yeah, it could have gone without it. Just let her, you know, so do her thing, escape the hospital.
That's actually not even my biggest criticism. Yeah. My biggest criticism is the writing, which is honestly strange because the writer is also Lee Whannell, but I think he's a better director than he is a writer.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, this is where I say like, let James Wan come in here and assist with the script. I understand what you're saying. The writing was a little bit on the weak side.
It's like very underwritten. It's like almost like first draft underwritten, because
a little bit,
like,
yeah.
And this is why it's like so like sad, like frustrating for me, because it's like, oh my god, like this has so much potential, because it's like it has like a great thematic presence and like a great theme, and the idea is there. It's just like the way that they like put it off, like,
yeah,
it does not come through. And that's why like I'm like more than happy to like talk about like all the themes and like how it ties into like gaslighting and abuse, but like a lot of like some basic level stuff was just like totally missing. Like, I really think some of like the characters were either they were underwritten, or didn't have like much of a personality. I don't know. It's like, it was almost like forced, sort of almost a Deus Ex Machina, like friendships sort of way. It's kind of like they only have like one sort of defining feature. So like Storm Reed's character, like she wants to go to fashion school or something. Like she wants to go to college. And like, that's like it. Like that's like the only sort of feature. And so other than that, she's like just a daughter. Also, can we address the fact that Aldous Hodge, Mr. Triceps himself, is 33 years old and like Storm Reed is like 17. So like, and I literally thought until he said it was his daughter, that they were like niece. Like I thought that was his niece because he's 33 and she's like 17. So he did not have her when he was like 16 and he's like in the police force. So can we get that out of the way at first?
I think you're being nitpicky.
that is the nitpicky thing. But the real criticism is like the fact that like they didn't really have like a whole. I didn't feel like they had a whole lot to do. I feel like I didn't really know who they were as characters. They're there to support Cecilia, and that's like. That's like fine because they're supporting characters, yeah. But like,
my question was how do you know that? Like, how are you guys related? I don't know. I guess it must slip through the cracks for me, but I didn't get really a sense of like where their relationship came from or like how they were like related. Like, I didn't understand.
You mean like with Aldous Hodge's character?
Yeah.
So, I think they were just friends, but yeah, like that's something that should have been explained.
Were they friends? Were they former lovers? Were they like, are they related somehow? I don't know. Like that wasn't explained. Yeah. So
yeah.
That I was like kind of curious about the whole time. So yeah, I do understand what you were saying there, but.
Or even like, just like hints at it. So, yeah. And so.
Cause I'm like, is there like a brewing love story here going on that I should be aware of, but is not?
Yeah.
So.
And so then there are like a couple other things too. So things where you don't need to establish that sort of backstory is like stuff with that Cecilia has the scenes like with her sister. Mm-hmm. Right. So, and in theory, like you don't need to establish that because have that connection, you know, for a long time. But I actually like actively disliked the sister.
I like the scene where her throat was slit in the restaurant. I thought that was awesome.
I know. And so this is my like this is my criticism of this too, because I don't think we were supposed to feel like overly sympathetic for the sister, but I don't think we were meant to dislike her too. And so I was like glad when she like got her throat cut. I was like, honestly, like she wasn't a good person, because the few scenes, like the scenes that we got to sort of interact with her too. So in the very beginning, she drives she drives Cecilia off, but like she pauses when like Cecilia is like rushing and like running and getting into the car. She's like, wait, like what's going on? And like Cecilia's like, drive. Like if your sister was like doing that, you should just be no questions asked. And she's like stopping like, oh, what is like happening?
Yeah. Well, so what I also say is in regards to Elizabeth Moss's performance, is that she gave such a strong performance, is that I didn't feel bad when the sister died. I did not care like at all, like that the sister died. I felt worse for Elizabeth Moss and that she was going to get dragged out into a mental institution. That's where I felt the strength lied. That like, I just didn't care that this like woman died. I care more that Elizabeth Moss is getting in trouble for this. So
yeah, she was also extremely rude to the waiter in the restaurant.
Yeah.
And like they played it off as like funny because like they go to this like modern sort of restaurant, and like where like the waiter's like here we have like open range eggs or whatever, and she's and like the sister's like, I don't care, it's like as long as like we're able to eat it or something. And I was like, poor waiter who's getting paid like less than minimum wage, like, and she's just like being rude to him for no reason.
Yeah, I think that was a little exaggerated.
And so, but again, this is like the underwritten sort of stuff too. Like, like, they could have made this stuff happen, right. like, way more of an emotional impact than it did, because I felt like the characters right. were sort of underdeveloped. So the supporting characters. The other, I'm hesitant to say this as a criticism, because I, like, kind of don't want to fault it, but, like, some of the effects were not great. Because I don't want to see it be, like, a big budget thing. I don't want it to be a big budget movie. Some of the effects on the suit, like the invisible yeah. suit, were a little rough.
I don't know. They didn't bother me. I thought they were fine. I didn't really look in too much into that. I was actually more, like, wondering the whole time, like, how they're going to pull this off and, like, how they're going to make him invisible. But then it started to click, like, oh, he's going to have a suit, like, about halfway through before you find out that he has a suit. So, like, that was, like, what I was more concerned about. And I thought they pulled off the suit pretty well. I was wondering how they were going to do it. Like, but again, because I'm trying to remember, in the original Invisible Man, like, was he just invisible? Have you seen the original Invisible Man? I saw it a long time ago.
No, never.
With my dad. But I can't remember, like, I think it was, like, an experiment gone wrong or something. But, like, in the original one, he wrapped himself up in, like, bandages so you could see him. And, like, in this one, it's just, like, he was actually invisible. And, like, they had to, like, throw... I thought the scene where she threw paint on him was, like, done really well. where she was in the attic. You didn't like that?
I like the scene, like, taken of itself. But the only time... The whole time I kept thinking, because she had just gotten into a fight with Aldous Hodge. And I was like, you just put paint all over his floor. Like, that's not, I know. I was like, you need to be, like, looking yeah. good in his eyes. You're not helping. but no, taken by itself, that yeah. was, like, a good effect. I'm talking, no, when I say the suit, I don't mean the effects of, like, him being invisible. I actually thought those were good. Like, when the suit would glitch is what I'm talking about. So, like, when he would, like, come in and out of invisibility, like, when she stabbed him and, like, the cameras, like, weren't working. And so that yeah. is the effects that I'm talking about that were a little rough. The invisible, yeah. like, the invisibility yeah, yeah.
It was done very well. So, yeah, I don't know if you wanted to, I guess, have anything else to say about it?
No, I think that's, that, like, covers mostly how I felt, too. I really like some parts, too. I like the movie's ideas as a whole, but, like, some of this stuff was yeah. just, like, a little rough around the edges yeah. for me.
I enjoyed the movie as a whole. I enjoyed Elizabeth Moss's acting more. I thought the story was done great, done well. But I agree with you that the writing could have been a little bit better. But overall, the big star here for me, the big takeaway was Elizabeth Moss and just how, like, she's a perfect human being and can do no wrong.
No, she's great. She's great in everything. So agreed. Like, I really like the stuff. Yeah, that,
cool. Well, I'm glad we can agree on
you
the stuff.
Really like too.
I gave. Yeah.
Do you have a final grade?
I gave it a B plus. I was, but then
it sounded like you were about to say A.
No, I had to go
there.
Look at my notes.
Did I detect that wrong?
I gave it a B plus because I was thinking it was an A minus, but no, it was a B plus. I have to be realistic now.
I feel like I'm a little tough on horror movies, so, and I feel like I shouldn't be, and so it's like going back and forth between a
okay,
C plus
fair.
And a B minus, but I'm gonna go with B minus. So I'm gonna go higher. I feel like a B minus
yeah.
is more of a passing grade than a C plus.
I appreciate it. I don't know if I'd actually prefer a B minus, because the word minus is just so negative. It's so negative. But C but then you got
I know,
the plus
but C
after it.
Sounds
you
know, so.
I don't know. There's a lot of negative connotation with B minus.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, that's why I give it a B plus.
Setting the bar low.
Anyway.
Before we get into next week's theme, at least wanted to give at least a quick sort of shout out to Emma, because of the amount of people that voted for it. It was this close to winning. So it's like one vote shy. So I feel like wanted to say at least a couple words about Emma, since everyone was so curious as to what we would think, too. Yeah. And it just happens to be a movie that we both have seen. Yeah,
Yeah, it's been a hot minute since I've seen it. So
even though it is like, available on demand.
And it kind of lost my attention halfway through. But I remember like enjoying it at the time. I thought a lot of the dialogue was funny and is quippy a word, but it didn't blow me away.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was cute. It was cute.
I thought it was, Emma's a weird one for me to review actually, because it's good. There's like the one standout thing that I'll point out is the cast, and I'll come back to that in a second. But like, there's nothing actively bad about Emma. Like, it might be a little bit long, and like some of the characters are like kind of mean, even though I know they're supposed to be. But like with fewer redeeming qualities, I don't know, like some of the parts like really like, but there's nothing like, there aren't that many huge standout scenes, but like the scenes that are bad, quote unquote, aren't really that bad. So it's,
yeah,
there's nothing really like extra to it.
I don't want to sound stupid.
Other than
but
like,
it was like kind of hard for me to follow along the dialogue, the Jane Austen-y language.
Oh my God. So I have to confess, I've never read Emma, and I've never seen any of the other film versions.
Oh yeah.
With the exception of Clueless. I of course was like following it in my head and like, okay, that's Ty. That's Josh.
Yeah.
So that's Dion. Like, I was like going through all the characters, all the Clueless characters in my head, and like applying them to Emma. So I was like playing that.
So
game.
I'm gonna confess it to you right now. I did not know that Clueless was based on Emma.
Oh really? Until now? Big moment. That probably would have helped you so much
wow.
watching
now,
Emma.
Okay, now I see it.
I guarantee you. An interesting point about the dialogue is I think there's a lot of influence from the movie The Favorite. And I think I'm quite surprised by this, but because there's going to be like another like Elle Fanning movie coming out that's similar to The Favorite, how influential The Favorite ended up being, because like a lot of this like big costume, like movie with like quippy dialogue, like snarky dialogue. But yeah, I think the best thing about Emma is the cast.
Yeah.
Because it's like a bunch of young up and coming actors. Yeah. Some of them honestly have already made it. But like, I think these are people who in 5 years, like you're really going to know who they are. So, I mean, the biggest one, like Emma is like Anya Taylor-Joy from like The Witch and Thoroughbreds.
Oh, she's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, she isn't Split. I haven't seen Split. Yeah. She's obviously like big one, but like Josh O'Connor.
I knew he was going to get a shout out from you.
This great movie, God's Own Country. Love him. And for fans of the TV show Sex Education, shout out. Love that. You should watch it on Netflix if you're looking for something to do. There are two actors from Sex Education who are in this, like Lily and Adam. The characters on Sex Education are both in this, so it's like great seeing them, like, and all these people who like are gonna be like who are probably gonna be big in the next few years.
And let us not forget
people in their early 20s. So it's exciting. Oh yeah, he's great. You know who I actually think was possibly the best in the movie? So it's this the nosy neighbor,
I love Miranda
Miss Bates.
Yeah. I felt really bad for her.
Miranda Hart. I know. You do feel really bad for her in this one particular scene. But like, she's just like so bubbly and like perfectly, perfect, like just teetering on annoying. And so, which is like, she very much annoys Emma. And so like, that's why I thought like it was really well done, and you really do feel bad for her in the scene where she gets like made fun of. So and she's like, she's great because she plays this like naivete.
Have you ever seen The Spy,
like,
with Melissa McCarthy?
And so I thought that was like nice.
It's so good, and Miranda Hart is like,
no, but I hear it's like so good. So
you have to watch it. I highly recommend.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got plenty of time, so you have no excuse.
Oh, good. Well, I mean, I've got nothing else to do. So, yeah. Yeah, so like Emma was good. Like a solid good.
Yeah,
I don't think anyone would really be blown away by it. But I don't think anyone
or clueless is about it. So I might go into it with a different perspective. So
yeah.
All right.
Are there any other movies like that you've seen that are like on demand now that were in theaters that you want to recommend?
I don't know. There's like shows I've been watching. I haven't really been watching a whole lot of movies. What about you? Any movies you've seen?
The one in particular, and probably my favorite movie of the year so far, is a movie that just came on demand called Never Rarely Sometimes Always. It's this indie movie. It's directed by Eliza Hittman, who did another great movie called Beach Rats, which is on Hulu, so you can watch that. And so Never Rarely Sometimes Always is about a 17-year-old girl in rural Pennsylvania who is pregnant and wants to get an abortion, but she can't in her hometown because of like the restrictions. Yeah. So she and her cousin have to go to New York City to get the abortion. And so it was a very beautiful and like realistic sort of movie, but it never felt like overly clinical. So it was just like really well done and heartfelt, and I was crying, and it was absolutely gorgeous. So like based on that premise alone, if you think you're gonna like it, you probably will. It's on demand right now. It got total of 2 days in theaters before it was cut short. And yeah, that but like I'm happy it's on demand in some respects too, because like that opens it up to an audience who like needs to see right? More so, than could have otherwise. So
I guess what I was saying earlier is that the good side about releasing these on demand is that you do get a wider audience. More people are able to view these movies, but I really hope that, again, what I said is that this is not the way that the studios go. But you're right. It does call on a bigger audience. So.
Yeah. Trying to see the bright side of things. It's a dark world out there. Okay. Well, anything else you want to say before we get into
what we're doing next week? There are a couple other movies like that I haven't seen yet that I do want to see that are on demand. I know The Gentleman is on demand. I do kind of want to see that with Matthew McConaughey. And... I guess this other movie is like Doolittle and the Wild, which I don't want to call the Wild, which I don't want to see. But like, I'm kind of curious to see Doolittle. I don't want to see it, but I'm curious about it. To hate watch it, yeah. Just and also, The Hunt is also available on demand. That was a fun little flick. If you're interested in that kind of stuff. So you know, murder, killing sprees, blood, guts going everywhere. Just if you're interested in that, I recommend it.
The excellent Betty Gilpin, who I adore.
And Glow is one of my all-time favorite shows, so I'm a huge fan of it. So I guess that's it from my end.
Okay. Yeah, go for it. Well, shall we tell them what we're doing next week? So this week we went with new movies. So our theme for the next week is going to be old movies, classic movies, specifically Best Picture winners. So this could be like a variety of things. It could be like big Best Picture winners, like unknown Best Picture winners, old classics, recent ones that we've seen. But like again, we're going to open it up to you for the four choices that are going to come from us. We're gonna Matt is going to pick two, and I'm going to pick two, and then you're going to choose on the four. And I don't know what Matt wants to pick, so and then he doesn't know what I want to pick. So
So
do you want to do it one by one? The reveals. Oh, sure. Okay, so my first one's actually going to be an old one, and it is the movie that is the top movie on my shame list of movies I've never seen, which I'm trying to put an armor. I'm trying to put a kink into that armor in quarantine by watching old movies, which I've been successful so far. So, but I number one movie on my shame list is Gone with the Wind.
I had to sit through 4 hours of Gone with the Wind. Oh god, it was 20 years ago, and I cannot. Oh please,
I sat through. I watched. Oh my god, I watched the Ten Commandments today. That is a 4-hour movie. There's nothing. What
you, I know.
There's nothing else to watch. There's no other.
I know. I've seen Gone.
He's trying to tilt the scale.
I saw Gone with the Wind.
He's placing his finger on the scale.
Sit through it. Like, I was like, I know this is a good movie, but like, I can't. Like, I do not have the patience for this. I don't even know where to watch it.
That's the point is to broaden your horizons.
All right. So I guess it's my turn. The number one movie on my shame list, which I know. It's like one of the greatest movies of all time, and I've always like wanted to get around to seeing it, and I just never gotten the chance, and I know I'm gonna love it if I see it, and I really hope we pick this, but One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I know I'm gonna love it.
I have seen it and I do love it.
I've never seen it. I don't know why I haven't seen it, but I do want to see it, and this would be a good excuse.
I also do love that movie. So another one on my shame list, which is what I try to want to do. I have never seen the movie Rocky.
I say wow because I was gonna say that.
Yeah. So
that was gonna be mine. Oh! I'm not gonna find another one.
Two back to backs. Because Rocky won the best picture right after.
Rocky, so I've never gotten around to watching the first one because I hate Rocky so much. But I love Creed. I love Creed. So Rocky the movie,
Rocky movies.
Yeah,
Rocky. I've seen them. You mean? Or
I've seen the sequels. I've seen like 3, 4.
Oh, so you have
never seen the original. So I was gonna say that. So I've never gotten around to seeing the original because I don't like the Rocky movies in general.
But you don't know if So what I'm hearing a lot is you don't like my choices.
That's what I'm saying. So I guess my backup for mine. Did you want to say anything more about Rocky?
No. I've never seen on my shame list, and I've never seen Creed or any of the other Rockies because I've never seen the first. I've never seen the first one, so I feel like if I want to go down that rabbit hole, I should start with number one.
A lot of people are going to be really mad at me for this. I've never seen The Sound of Music, so that's...
Oh, wow! I'm sorry.
Yeah, I've never seen The Sound of Music.
I hate it when people have reactions of what? You've never seen that?
Yeah, I've never gotten around to. And I've never seen it. I know everyone loves it and says it's the greatest thing ever. I've seen snippets of it. I've seen parts and bits and pieces, but I've never seen the whole thing. So yeah, that's one thing I'd be curious to I don't know if I'd like it because I watched, what's it called? The Princess Bride, as an adult, and I didn't like it. So I don't know if I would like this, but we'll see. So I guess we'll put that as one of the choices.
Yeah. Cool. I have actually really been enjoying watching all these classic movies that I've never really seen before. I saw Sunset Boulevard for the first time ever, and Singing in the Rain. So I'm excited to watch all these classic type movies. Would highly recommend that you guys.
Oh, I'm sure you've seen some of these.
You may have seen some of these
already, Rocky and the Sound of Music.
I mean, we picked fairly big ones, right? So we didn't pick obscure ones. So I think that's good. But if you want to watch along with us, we would love to. I think be great for conversation. But we'll open up the poll to you all. So we'll post on our Facebook page at facebook.com/stepandrepeatpod. And we'll post a poll on Twitter at at Repeat Step Pod. And if you don't have social media, but you have access to email, and you've heard the choices now between Gone with the Wind, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Rocky, and The Sound of Music, just shoot us an email with your choice at stepandrepeatpod@gmail.com. Yeah, yeah. And we take like the tally of all those.
So, all right, cool. Anything else to add?
Add them, and that's how we get the winner. No, please vote. I know it's like awkward on the Facebook page to like do the voting through the reaction buttons, but Facebook decided to take polling options down. So that's like the only way we can do it. This is like listener interactive. So we really want to get a sense of what you say and hear and influence how we're doing. So
that's it for our time tonight. We really want to thank you for tuning in. I know you have a lot of other entertainment options to consider while you're home in quarantine, but we want to thank you for listening, and it's an honor just to be considered. Good night.